more than 10,000 people dead, 5 million more displaced, and no end in sight to the fighting. This is what Sudan looks like today. With three wars raging around the world, has the one in Northeast Africa been forgotten? This week, we'll discuss the latest on a country living what the United Nations calls one of the worst nightmares in recent history. Straight Talk Africa starts now. This is Straight Talk Africa coming to you from VOA's headquarters in Washington. I'm Heidi Adams. Hello there and welcome. 2023 was supposed to be the year that the people of Sudan would go to the polls and choose their next leader after decades of dictatorship, coups and conflict. But instead, this was a year of war. A war the UN says has created the world's fastest growing displacement crisis. With ongoing conflicts in the Middle East and Eastern Europe, some Sudanese citizens believe the world has forgotten the war in their country. In April, a rivalry between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces, or RSF, erupted into all-out war, turning the capital of Khartoum into a bloodbath. At the center of the conflict are these two men, Sudan's military leader, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and paramilitary commander Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, known as Hamedi of the RSF. The brutal fighting between them seems to have no end in sight. Well, to help us understand what is happening and how Sudan went from coming so close to democracy to all-out war is VOA's is our analyst here, Sama Salman. She's an independent Sudanese analyst. And also joining us is Matilda Vu. She is from the Norwegian Refugee Council, and she joins us via Skype from Nairobi in Kenya. Matilda and Sama, a warm welcome to Straight Talk Africa. And Sama, I want to start with you. Abdel Fattah Burhan of the Sudanese Armed Forces and the RSF's Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, these are the two men who promised Sudan the country would transition from military rule to civilian rule to democracy, ultimately. The same two men now responsible for a war that has left only death and destruction. If you look at Sudan today, what was supposed to happen in this country that didn't?
Thank you, Heidi. It's always great to be with you. Tragically, 5 years from this day was the beginning of Sudan's glorious revolution. And so today, we were supposed to be a prosperous nation, building a society that was basically moving towards elections. And we are at the exact polar end of the spectrum, and we're in a war of total destruction and devastation.
Matilda, I want to bring you in here. We talk of this immense humanitarian crisis unfolding in Sudan. Can you give us some insight into the humanitarian situation in the country right now? It's been about 8 months, but I'm sure it feels much longer for the people at the receiving end of this war. Where are people fleeing to and where are they fleeing from?
Sure. You know, that's actually a very heartbreaking question, because I was talking to my colleague this morning and I was asking them, where are you going to go? So my colleagues left Wad Madani and they went to Kusti, which is at the border of South Sudan, and they actually don't feel safe there. And they know that the war, now they know that the war is not going to stop in Wad Madani and might spread even more, and they have no idea where to go. It's people who fled Khartoum 8 months ago, as you said, and it's been 8 months of daily fighting, daily attacks, attacks on civilians, attacks on civilian infrastructures, the entire capital completely destroyed, Darfur, the region on fire with mass atrocities being committed. And now over this past, you know, 3-4 days, one of Sudan's latest lost, let's say, sanctuary just turned into a war zone. And we had an immense number of people fleeing, something like 300,000 people fleeing in the past 72 hours.
You know, Summer, in July, the International Criminal Court's prosecutor, Karim Khan, said he was investigating fresh allegations of war crimes and crimes against humanity in Sudan's Darfur region. Given the history of Darfur specifically and what the U.S. calls genocide that happened in that part of the country, what do you know about the latest of that around that ICC probe?
Well, Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan of the ICC has reopened the investigation based on the war crimes, the atrocities, the ethnic cleansing, and the horrific sexual and gender-based violence that's currently being carried out by the RSF primarily, but by both sides of the war. Mr. Khan has also said that he would look into expanding his mandate and not look at and look at war crimes being committed in Darfur, but also in the entirety of Sudan, because the war crimes that are being committed are so egregious. And so you have a situation now where it was Darfur, which was the center focal point of these war crimes, and now you're looking at a situation where the entire Sudan is now victim to these war crimes. And so what they're doing now is working very closely with the UN Human Rights Council. Most recently, the UN Human Rights Council passed a resolution that called for an independent investigative mechanism. And so you have three persons who were just appointed yesterday, actually, to lead this investigation and to head this mechanism. And what they're doing, these three independent experts, is compiling the data and the evidence that will allow the UN Security Council and allow the ICC to go forward into either a more serious atrocity determination and to start holding the perpetrators of these crimes accountable.
We're also being joined here by my colleague Nabil Biagio, who works in VOA's Africa News Division. He covers South Sudan in focus. Nabil, I just want to ask you to, you know, just given the history of Sudan, I mean, I remember even as a young reporter for years, we were covering the stories coming out of Darfur. Today, this is an atrocity. We're seeing atrocities throughout the country. What are you learning in your reporting about the toll the last 8 months have taken on the country of Sudan?
It's been very devastating. And just to start with the latest, Haiti, we had a new front in this war, in this conflict that just opened a few days ago. Up until Friday, the early hours of Friday, fighting was concentrated in Khartoum, the capital, which you guess correctly said almost completely destroyed now. Darfur was also has been hit very hard with echoes from atrocities that were committed 20 years ago when the U.S. declared genocide, declared the Darfur region a site of genocide. From Friday up until now, more than 300,000 people have been displaced in a Jaziri state with Medini. This is the new front in this war and has been very devastating. It's a key state in Sudan. It's a humanitarian hub. It has been refuge for people escaping Khartoum and other parts of Sudan hit by the violence. And now, just only yesterday, the army actually acknowledged that the RSF are in charge of Jazira Medini and that their forces withdrew. RSF commander and leader, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, appointed a new commander for that division in Medini. So the toll is devastating, is huge, and this war is mutating in ways that we have not seen in the last 8 months. It has been, it's almost taking the contours of a full-blown civil war at this moment.
Matilda, almost whenever there is a war anywhere in the world, I mean, it's always there are warning signs for surrounding countries about what they can expect should there be any spillover. Right now, we're seeing so many people displaced. What about the surrounding countries in East Africa? Which countries are taking in refugees? How is that process going?
Yeah. So I think, as you mentioned at the beginning, like Sudan is one of the largest displacement crises in the world. 6.7 million people displaced inside the country and across the borders. It's something like 1.1 million people right now who have fled to South Sudan, to Chad, to Ethiopia, and to Egypt. So really, like, the tragedy of this war is that, you know, people are fleeing a country, but they also are ending up in places that are also quite fragile and unstable. They are struggling with their own, you know, humanitarian crisis. So people, for example, in Chad right now are in desperate situation in camps close to the border. And it's the same, for example, in South Sudan.
Nabil, I just want to return to you quickly here. You know, whenever we talk about Sudan, you cannot talk about what's going on in the country without remembering that, you know, its longtime leader Omar al-Bashir has played a very, very important role in what is playing out today. What do we know about Omar al-Bashir's whereabouts? There was a prison break earlier in the year and questions about where exactly he is. What do we know about where he is right now?
The last thing we know about his whereabouts, just like you correctly mentioned, was at the prison break when it happened, with the outbreak of the war. We know that he's a high target by the rapid support forces, but also the army has interest in protecting him. So he was taken out of prison. No one knew anything about his whereabouts since then. There are speculations that he might be outside the country. Given the reality just on the ground that Khartoum is not livable anymore. Even the commander-in-chief of the army left Khartoum many months ago. He never returned. He's taken up residence in Port Sudan and running his government from there. I can't imagine there's any safe place for Bashir to be in Khartoum or in Sudan at large. The speculations that he might be in Turkey. We even heard South Sudan and other places, but we don't have any concrete evidence of his whereabouts.
Samai, in the absence of concrete evidence about his whereabouts, one has to ask, what kind of influence does he still wield these days? Part of what's happening are monsters of his own making. Does he wield influence from wherever he might be?
Oh, absolutely, Heidi. I mean, this is crucial to bring to the surface. I mean, Omar al-Bashir's party, the NCP or the Islamists, are actually the ones who are waging the war through the leadership of the SAF, which is the Sudan Armed Forces. So although we visibly see two militant factions, the Sudanese Armed Forces and the RSF, the Rapid Support Forces, fighting each other, the SAF, of course, headed by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and the RSF headed by Mohammed Hamdan Dagalo, the actual invisible hand that is moving the SAF are the Islamist militants and the old guard of Omar al-Bashir. And we have Ali Kerti yesterday, who is the leader of the Islamist movement, who just for the first time put out a public statement about their leadership in the war in Sudan.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation after the break. I do want to say thank you and goodbye to Nabil Biagio and Matilda Vu from the Norwegian Refugee Council. Thank you so much for your insights and your reporting there, Nabil. Please stay with me, Sama Salman. We're going to continue this discussion after a short break. When Straight Talk Africa returns, we will look at the prospects for peace in Sudan's ongoing war and who is funding the fighting in that country. My guests are standing by. Straight Talk Africa will be back in a moment.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
You're with Straight Talk Africa. Welcome back. Northeast African country of Sudan has been in the grip of unrelenting war since April this year. Thousands of people are dead as a result of the fighting between Sudan's military and the paramilitary group Rapid Support Forces, or RSF. But with other conflicts raging in the Middle East and Eastern Europe, has the world forgotten about the war in Sudan? Who's trying to end this war and who's trying to keep it going? And with me once again here in studio is Samar Salman. She's a Sudanese analyst, and Suleiman Baldo. He is the director of Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker, and he joins me from the U.S. state of New Jersey. Welcome back, Samar and Suleiman. Thank you so very much for joining us. Suleiman, I want to start with you. Do you believe that what we're seeing in Sudan has become a forgotten war? And if so, why do you think that is?
It is indeed a forgotten war for multiple reasons. I would say fatigue of the international community from all these conflicts that are happening now. Focus on particular conflicts, therefore, is now limited to the Gaza situation, the war between Palestinians and the State of Israel. And on the other hand, Ukraine has drawn much of the international attention and humanitarian resources at the expense of conflicts in Africa, such as in the Democratic Republic of Congo and in Sudan, where we are watching a conflict that has displaced forward of 7 million people and causing a lot of destruction and suffering. And therefore, the war is neglected, and this is shameful at this time.
Samar, what is your take on this? And when you do see the sort of outpouring of support for people suffering because of the Israel-Hamas war and the people in the war in Ukraine, of course, justifiably so, whenever there is war, people will take a stance and support one or other side. But just going by pure optics alone, if you see all those protests for those wars around the world, what do you make of that? And does it make you wonder about where's the support, the global outrage for what's going on in Sudan?
Yeah, Heidi, the Sudan war is a forgotten war, but I think it's more nuanced than that. I think that from the very outset, Sudan was never a top priority on the global stage. So even when the war broke out, I mean, the Ukraine war was ongoing, and Sudan was still struggling to receive, you know, international support and humanitarian assistance. So the term forgotten, is it forgotten? Yes, but it has been forgotten and neglected from the very outset, unfortunately. However, I think there's a differentiation to be made between the global stage and regionally. Regionally, in terms of the interventions and the interference in Sudan's affairs, I think that Sudan is very much an active war where there seems to be a high degree of interest from many actors in the region. And so I don't think at a regional level it's been forgotten at all. To the very contrary, I think there's been a huge amount of unnecessary intervention in Sudan's war.
The sort of negative attention
the
war. Suleiman, help us understand the efforts around possibly bringing an end to the war in Sudan. Who is at the negotiating table, and are their efforts really working?
U.S. and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia launched the Jeddah talks back in May.
limited to the belligerents with the aim of achieving a ceasefire that would allow humanitarian operations to proceed. However, by December, the talks proved futile in the sense that belligerents consistently failed to stand by obligations they signed up to in the talks. We are seeing that the sub-regional intergovernmental agency for development, the IGAD, has taken up the reins and now is leading a new initiative that is likely to succeed in achieving a ceasefire and to launch a civilian-led political process as part of this peace process in the coming weeks, provided that Al-Burhan and Hemeti, the head of the Rapid Support Forces, stick with their commitments to the IGAD, that they will meet in person just to show political determination to end the conflict, and that they will agree unconditionally to a civilian-led civilian process. This is a far cry from developments on the ground, where we are seeing an intensification of the fighting in this end-of-year weeks and a massive expansion of the humanitarian crisis in the country.
Sama, it's been said that, you know, wars almost always end with a political solution and not a military one. How do you bring a political solution when the warring factions are a military faction and a paramilitary faction?
That's a very difficult question. And indeed, it's proved to be almost impossible. I mean, when you look at the attempts at arbitration and negotiation since the outset of the war, I mean, they've proved to be futile simply because the two belligerents, the two warring factions, both believe themselves to be the rightful heirs of Sudan, basically. I mean, this is a power struggle. This is a war for political control. This is a war for economic and resource control. And this is a war also where you have two belligerents, the Sudanese Armed Forces chief, Commander General Burhan, and the commander of the RSF, General Hemeti, are trying to both escape accountability. I mean, they're both under huge pressure in terms of the atrocities and the war crimes that have been committed under their command. And so basically you have a situation where you have a third party, the Islamists or the old guard of Omar al-Bashir, who are actually at the center of this war. They're not spoken about explicitly that much. But when you look at who really controls and calls the shots in terms of the Sudanese armed forces, the question is it General Burhan? Or is it actually the Islamist leaders of the party of Omar al-Bashir? Because where you have what you have right now is a situation where Ali Karti and other Islamist leaders are now actually coming above the ground and starting to make statements about their intentions surrounding the Sudan war. So it's very difficult where you have a negotiating situation where you're negotiating with two visible military commanders, but the actual entity that holds a lot of power is not really explicitly at the negotiating table.
As Suleiman said, what's happening at the negotiating table, perhaps a far cry from what's going on the ground. Suleiman, I want to come back to you. We've talked about efforts to end the war, but what about efforts to keep the war going? Where does the money for this unrelenting conflict come from? Who profits from it?
There are credible reports of the United Arab Emirates supporting the Rapid Support Forces who have fought on their behalf in the war in the Yemen against the Houthi. But let me point that the belligerents are sitting on large war chests as a result of 30 years of kleptocratic rule under Omar al-Bashir. And therefore, they have immense resources, both in the army and the Rapid Support Forces, to continue waging this war. A burgeoning, thriving war economy is underway, where the army and the rebellious support forces are basically taxing movement of trade in their areas of control, and they have basically split the country in two. The West being under the military control of the Rapid Support Forces, and the East, center and north of Sudan, under the Sudan Armed Forces. And we are witnessing an immense movement of consumer goods from you know, border trade with Egypt, for the army, across the Red Sea with the Arab Gulf cooperation countries, for the army again, whose government is based in Port Sudan. But at the same time, there is a regulation of now international trade in the border between Sudan and Libya, and to a lesser degree with the Sahel region, because Sudan didn't have much trade with the Sahel. Plunder is the main motivation of the fighters of the rebel support forces. We have seen massive theft, systematic, looting of all areas that the support forces has come to occupy, particularly of high-priced four-wheel vehicles. Thousands of them has been stolen from towns and regions occupied by rebel support forces and traded off-border in Chad and in different areas to the west of Darfur. Therefore, there are multiple sources that can keep this conflict ongoing. However, I expect that given the widespread fighting, the financial ability for the belligerents to continue sustaining the war efforts would deplete rapidly, and that financial exhaustion and military exhaustion may end up bringing a certain balance of weakness forcing the belligerents to come back again to the table to reach a negotiated settlement.
Samar, just very briefly, what are your greatest fears and your greatest hope for your country? And also, what are the hopes and the fears of the people of Sudan?
I mean, my greatest fears, Haiti, are that there are multiple crises taking place in Sudan right now and that they continue to remain unaddressed. There's a massive displacement crisis. Sudan has the largest number of internally displaced people in the world right now. There's a hunger crisis. That's the second crisis. There's a looming famine in Sudan that people aren't talking about. The agricultural season is now forecasted to fail. And you have a situation where 40% of Sudan's food resources are coming from the domestic production. The third is the health crisis. 70% of Sudan's hospitals are not operating. And the fourth is an educational crisis. You have 20 million children displaced and out of school. So you have huge, huge crises. In terms of my hopes, I hope that the glorious revolution of Sudan is, I know that it's still alive and thriving in the hearts and minds of the Sudanese people. And my hope is that we still prevail despite the challenges in front of us.
And hopefully it's not going to be much longer until the country sees that day. But in the meantime, we will keep a close eye on what is going on there and keep reporting on this war. Suleiman Baldo, thank you so much for your time. Samar Salman, thank you for coming in and for helping us understand what is going on. And thank you so much for joining us here on Straight Talk Africa. That is it for us for this week. Thanks for joining us on television, radio, and online. I'll see you next time. Goodbye.